Donuts. So just who put the hole in the donut? And why are donuts so popular in Maine? I'm Cindy Hahn, and today we're going to get answers to those questions and more. Join me as we learn the story of the donut's invention right here in our state, as well as all about the beloved sweet treat in all of its forms, from cake to raised, from apple cider to molasses. And what's the deal with these donuts loaded with elaborate toppings? We'll also talk about the magic behind making the perfect donut, and what different Maine donut shops offer up as their specialties, and how they contribute to Maine's economy. Maple bacon donut, anyone? Maine Calling is next, but first this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Cindy Hahn, and this is Maine Calling. Sure, Maine is home to whoopie pies and all sorts of blueberry-baked goodies, but we also have a special claim to the donut. Not only are there all manner of donut shops across our state, we also had something to do with the origins of this circular treat. We'll hear more about that today from our panel of donut experts. Joining me in the studio, Sandy Oliver. She's a freelance food writer with a weekly column in the Bangor Daily News, and she's a pioneering food historian. Nancy Harmon Jenkins, she's a cookbook author, food historian, and speaker, and a regular on Maine Calling. And Alexis Yamarino is an interdisciplinary artist and educator based in Rockland who is leading a curatorial project about the history of the donut. As always, we want to hear from you. What's your favorite place to get donuts in Maine? Any flavor preferences? Do you make your own donuts? Our phone number is 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. And Alexis, I'm interested to hear about your project, but first of all, let's just start with Maine's claim to fame, that we actually had some kind of pivotal role in inventing the donut.
Sure.
You centered your exhibit, your work on this.
Yes. So did you know that the hole in the donut is said to have been invented in 1847 in Rockport, Maine, by a 15-year-old sea captain named Hanson Crockett Gregory? That's the claim. And through the project, I learned, and maybe now this is where I can pass it over to the esteemed Sandy.
Sandy,
to shine a little light.
That's a well-told story in Maine. Is that not the case? Alexis just implied that's not true, that this captain invented the donut.
I think Nancy and I are going to agree that, no, he didn't invent it. It didn't really need inventing so much as it.
Well, tell us the story first so we know what we're refuting.
Do you want me to tell the story?
I'll go for it, Nancy.
Yeah, well, the story is this man named Hanson Gregory, who was a sea captain, and the story gets very embroidered. It turns out that he was in the China trade, and he was shipping spices, and his mother was making these fried cakes and putting his spices in them. It's very hard to believe about Glen Cove, Maine, which is a little subsection of Rockport, that anybody was in the China trade out of there. But the story is that she made these donuts so that these they were what the Dutch call olie cakes. They're round dough sweetened, sometimes a spice added, and they're deep fried. Okay, so this is Mrs. Gregory. She's making these things for her poor son who's going off to sea, probably hauling wood up to Boston, to tell the truth. And a big storm comes up, and he's at the wheel, at the helm, and he's spinning his wheel around, and he gets exasperated with all these donuts. And so he sticks them on the spokes of the wheel so they'll be ready access to him. And lo and behold, the hole in the donut is born right there in Glen Cove, Maine.
And there's even a plaque to mark
yes,
that.
Yes, there is indeed, yeah. It's a very funny, very sweet story, and it was revived by a man in Camden named Dave Crockett, who was a direct descendant of Captain Hanson Gregory, and he started a donut festival. This is about the time, you know, Camden had the first lobster festival that ever existed, and it was about that time that Dave Crockett invented this donut festival.
Fred Crockett.
He's a descendant, of this sea captain.
But I think it's interesting that you know, there was a big push to bring tourism to Maine. This is after World War II. Suddenly everybody's got gas that's not rationed any longer. They can travel. What are they going to travel to Maine for? Lobsters? and donuts.
But this is all over the place. No one's ever said it's not true. I've read it in national publications that this
you have indeed. I think you've read it in Smithsonian Magazine, right. Even, perhaps. But well, Sandy's got all of the evidence of much earlier references to donuts.
All right, Sandy, let's hear it. Where did the donut come from if it wasn't from Captain Gregory?
It just comes from the human impulse to put delicious bits of fat, delicious bits of batter in a lot of fat. It's a festival food. Whenever you're consuming large amounts of grease like that, especially in past times, it almost always indicates some festive occasion, like pancakes on Shrove Tuesday before Lent. But, you know, what we have here, all these little fried dough bits. We have oily cakes, which are the round ones that Nancy described. Then we have dough nuts. A lot of the earliest donuts were nuts of dough. They had no hole in them. They were what we would call a donut hole.
Oh, and the nuts were in the center of the little dough ball.
Well, yes, unless you're rolling your dough out and, you know, forming it in a ring and then frying it.
Oh.
But then there's crullers.
Like a walnut. Sandy,
yeah, like
right?
A walnut. Yeah.
About that size.
And it cooks up really nicely. I've made those.
But you think that's why they're called dough nuts?
Yes.
Oh,
I do.
Okay.
And so the terms for all these little fried things change over time. We finally get, we can pick any number of dates, but they're a donut cutter, which was a ring with a hole in the middle of it, was patented in 1857, which is 10 years after Hanson Gregory stuck his blob of dough on the spoke of a ship's wheel. Have you ever seen a ship's wheel and the spokes on? I mean, they're huge.
This is sad, though.
I had a very small boat,
Sandy. This beloved
Sandy.
Story is being debunked on Maine Calling.
I have this wonderful primary source from Fred Crockett where he says his version of the true donut invention, and which is not the spoke of the wheel, but which is a story that the family claimed. So I could share that if you like.
Sure. So this is the descendant of the sea captain,
yes,
telling his story.
Exactly. So this is Fred Crockett, who is a nonagenarian cousin of the captain. And he says in a letter in 57, which is a year of this donut festival that Nancy mentioned. So it says, in his words, "The true story of the donut hole discovery is as follows. Hanson Crockett Gregory was born in Clam Cove, Maine, then part of the township of Camden. When a lad of 15, he was watching his mother make dough cakes in a large kettle of fat in the iron stove. 'Why doesn't the center cook up?' Hanson asked. After eating one, 'They taste so soggy.' And then his mother did not really reply, and he said, 'I have an idea,' and he poked a hole through the center. He picked up a fork, poked it through, and the center of the dough and the cake in the hole was born. In 1847, thus donuts as we know them today."
Aha.
Sure. So you take a fork and poke it in the middle of
donut.
You know.
There's some other interesting history, though, about donuts, right, Sandy? As far as in the wartime, they were being made.
Sure, as treats for the men. Well, they were made on board whale ships in the 19th century as well. For every 1,000th barrel that was filled with oil, and if the men knew they had a whale alongside, and that they were going to reach their 1,000 barrel, they were excited and woke up in the morning yelling for donuts, and the captain's wife and the steward and the cook often got together, mixed up all of the donut batter, and they fried it in the whale oil, which, you know, to modern people sounds ghastly, but actually it isn't. It was good, clean, clear oil. You could just buy up a big batch of them and pass them out among the men. So the donuts were a big treat. World War I and World War II, my dad recalls being on a bus in England in World War II before D-Day, and good ladies of the village came on board with donuts that they had fried in mutton fat, and the Americans were appalled.
Is this where I heard there was a term, donut dollies, or the women who were helping to make the donuts for the soldiers?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds fascinating, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
I think it was in the Smithsonian that they were talking about the women going out to the front lines with donuts.
Right.
And if you've ever seen a photograph of the trenches in World War I, you have to ask yourself how those well-dressed ladies of bounty ever made their way out to the Somme and all those places. I mean, carrying trays of donuts with ammunition whistling over their heads.
Oh,
I find it very hard to believe.
Maybe that's how the hole in the donut was invented.
Oh,
there
yes,
you go.
Of
you
course.
You figured
Sandy,
it out.
You've got it.
Now, Alexis, we didn't sort of describe what it is that you work on in relation to the donut. What exactly is it that you're doing?
Sure. So I was told the story in 2014. I was researching for a community mural at the time, and I was at the Historical Society in Rockland, which is where I was told that the donut was invented in Rockland. And then someone quickly jumped in to say, well, we didn't invent the donut, but we did put the hole in it.
Right.
And then this conversation started around, well, it wasn't Rockport, it was Clam Cove, and I could already tell, oh my gosh, it's such a great story. And so 2 years later, I organized a call for submissions to artists, authors, and historians. And what grew out of that was an art show, which now has kind of grown now into a public history project where I collect and present exhibits and give talks around sort of what it is to stake claim to such a thing. So right now I'm exploring this idea through the invention story of the donut, but what it has actually really become more about is how do we tell stories and what is a great story and how do communities retell those stories around, food, culture, any particular history that people have a strong connection to. So
you've
really
gotten a lot of donut stories from people.
Yes, I have. So I received a kindling grant from the Space Gallery, and I was able to collect. I have all of the submissions from the show. We did a part exhibition catalog with plates of the reproductions of work, and then a whole, it's 246 pages of material, all collected in 1 month. Just to give you a sense of the enthusiasm that people have for the subject, but also, as I mentioned in planning for the show, there's just so many people for whom the social history of food is the epicenter of their work. And so I just found myself talking to people like Sandy and Sally Levitt Steinberg, Michael Crandall, a whole host of, historians on the subject who, again, have a personal connection to the story because they themselves either bake or practice, those traditions. So,
well, you touched upon something I wanted to talk about, and I read that the average American eats 31 donuts each year. And, what is it that people love about donuts so much? It sort of inspires this level of devotion you don't necessarily see with croissants or bagels or Danish. I mean, is it that they're nostalgic? Is it that they're so happy looking? What, from your stories or from what you've learned, what do you think it is about donuts?
I'd be hard put to say. I'm not really a big fan of most donuts.
Oh, blasphemy.
I spent a lot of time in the last couple of weeks trekking around this state sampling donuts in various places, and I have to say I tasted an awful lot of bad donuts. I think people like things that are sweet and fat, and that's what a donut is.
That's what it boils down to.
Yeah, I think so. Although I think the quality of, I've had some really good donuts in my trekking, but I've had an awful lot of really bad donuts. And I think I compare donuts to bagels, not just because they're both round with a hole in them, but they both are things that started out at small scale production and then they got popular and they got industrialized. And the industrial, it always kind of diminishes the quality of anything once it becomes industrialized. And that became a standard. And that's why we have so many bad donuts.
And that's why you decided to make some of your own,
I
understand.
Indeed.
So we're going to do a little taste test a little later in show. I'll be eating later. But I wanted to talk, too, about the kinds of donuts that there are, because we're not just talking about one specific thing. There's cake, there's yeast, right? Raised or glazed, whatever. One of you, Sandy, how about you take us through sort of the categories of donuts?
Oh, my God. In Maine, we have molasses donuts, which we used to have more of elsewhere in New England, but in Maine, they last a little bit longer. I had my last molasses donut at Weaver's Bakery in Belfast, which, alas, is closed. And I haven't followed Matt Weaver out to Waldo, where he has a convenience store, does baking. They make donuts out there. So I don't know if you can still get a molasses donut out there, but that's one. And then there's the yeast and the glazed and the, oh my goodness. The only thing I haven't seen yet, but has anybody had a donut with blueberries in it? Have we invented that in Maine yet?
No. Do you think it would be wonderful?
Sounds like a terrible idea.
I'm thinking.
Alexis, you have, right?
I believe that Willow Bakeshop, rather, in Rockland does a blueberry donut. And I don't know, they sometimes do a seasonal pumpkin, but they also sometimes do a seasonal blueberry. So.
And they do seasonal apple cider, too, because I was too late for apple cider this year at Willow. Willow Bakery is a famous bakery in Rockland, and they said, oh, we only do those in October, and it was the 1st of November.
Right. Well, that brings up the topic that apple cider donuts and blueberry donuts, too, I think are really found a lot of times on the farms and orchards all around Maine. So you don't go to a bake shop. You have to go out picking blueberries, and then you get a great blueberry donut. So that's a very Maine phenomenon, isn't it?
I think it certainly is.
Yeah.
But the other Maine phenomenon that I had at Holy Donut last week was a donut glazed with apples, with Allen's coffee brandy. That's very Maine.
Ooh. The tough research you did for this show, Nancy. We did actually, when you mentioned molasses donuts, we got a message from Sadie's Bakery up in Holton, and I think molasses donuts are one of their specialties. They wanted us to know that Sadie's Bakery is a 70-year-old tradition. Original owner was Sadie Hand. She opened the bakery in 1948, and as of today, the same recipe is being used to make the donuts. The favorites are molasses and chocolate, as well as plain. In recent years, pumpkin and potato donuts were added to the menu. The current owners, Christy Fitzpatrick and Robin Green, have had the bakery for just over 2 years. Robin's sister, Sharon O'Donnell, and brother-in-law, Tim O'Donnell, own the bakery for 36 years. While donuts aren't the only thing they offer, they're what the bakery is known for, hopefully for many years to come. So way up there in Holton, they're cranking out the good old molasses donuts that you were talking about, Sandy. What about internationally? There are different versions of donuts, too, right? I mean, I guess fritters of some sort in different cultures. Is it malasadas? There's Italian versions.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about the Italian zeppole.
Right.
Which is basically a donut without a hole in it. And it works fine, and it cooks all the way through. And that's often made for the Feast of St. Joseph in March. San Giuseppe, and zeppole comes from San Giuseppe. And that's a very typical deep-fried, all over the Mediterranean you find these deep-fried sweet things. And not always sweet either, sometimes savory. But again, as Sandy said, it's festive food. It's not everyday food at all. And it's often connected with a holiday of some sort.
You mentioned savory donuts. Our executive producer, Jonathan Smith, just said he heard of a bacon cheese egg donut or something like that. So I think things are getting
Out of hand.
Well, we'll just take a quick break right now. And when we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Dean's Sweets, specializing in hand-dipped truffles, caramels, buttercreams, and other seasonal chocolates in Portland and at deanssweets.com. And the law offices of Joe Bornstein, Maine lawyers committed to working for Maine people since 1974. Learn more at joebornstein.com.
Some people like to splash and play. Can you imagine that?
On the next Fresh Air, Emily Blunt. She stars as Mary Poppins in the new film Mary Poppins Returns, which has new songs and a new story. Blunt also co-starred in The Devil Wears Prada, A Quiet Place, and the film adaptation of Sondheim's Into the Woods. Join us.
You can listen to Fresh Air tonight at 7 here on Maine Public Radio. It's that time of year when our thoughts are on those who are important to us, and also organizations we care about. Since Maine Public is one of the organizations you value, please consider making a year-end gift. You can become a first-time donor, increase your Evergreen Friend gift, join the Beacon level, donate stock, or even donate that car. Thanks for your support. It makes public radio in Maine possible. To make a donation, go online at mainepublic.org and click on the red donate button or call and speak with Scott Marshaldon at 207-330-4510. That's 207-330-4510. Thanks, and have a happy and safe holiday season.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Today on the program, Maine's donut scene. Joining me in the studio, Nancy Harmon Jenkins. She's a cookbook author and all-around food expert. Alexis Yamarino, artist and educator, who's leading a project about the history of the donut. and Sandy Oliver, food writer with a weekly column in the Bangor Daily News, and she's a food historian. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Now, Nancy, I know you have a little bag there that you brought, and I wanted to talk, before we dig into that bag, which I'm eager to do, what is the key to making a good donut?
Having your hot, your fat hot. I almost said having your hot fat.
That would not be good.
It has to be up above 350 degrees. I think it needs to be closer to 375. And that's hard to do on a regular stove because you really have to control the heat of it. You have to keep measuring it all the time to make sure it's hot enough. Old-fashioned cooks didn't measure it because they just knew.
Is there a certain kind of fat or oil?
Well,
that you need
lard
to use?
Is what is traditionally used. Yeah. And I did make some lard donuts last week, but this batch that I made just now, I made with half lard and half, I'm embarrassed to say this because I am known as the olive oil queen, but it was half lard and half canola oil, and it worked very, very well. I think the canola oil kind of balances the lard in a way, but lard, not the kind of lard you get in the supermarket that's full of preservatives, but go to a butcher shop where they will give you real 100% rendered pork fat that they've rendered themselves. Main Street Meats in Rockport, for instance, has wonderful lard. Mm-hmm. So that's the key to the whole thing, is the hot fat. And then, of course, you mix up all the other stuff. But it's
what
easy.
What is all the other stuff?
All the other stuff is very easy to do. Basically, it's like making a cake. You you beat up some sugar and butter, and then you beat in some eggs, and then you beat in your flavoring. And that could be, I suppose it could be molasses, or it could be apple cider, or it could be buttermilk, or all kinds of other things. And a little leavening of some sort, baking soda, baking powder. Nutmeg seems to be quintessential, but I always think you have to be very careful with nutmeg because it overpowers very quickly. And then the flour. And then here's the trick that I learned from Yankee Magazine, however. Once you've patted that all out, it's very sticky dough, you put it in the refrigerator, even overnight, covered so it doesn't dry out. And that firms the dough up so it makes it easier to cut the donuts out. And then you just heat the fat up, measure it very carefully to make sure you've got the right temperature, drop the donuts in and watch them sizzle and turn golden.
That's the fun part.
Yes, it really is.
This is cake donuts that you're talking about?
Yes, it's the only kind I would ever make. It's the only kind I ever, it's what I grew up eating in Maine.
Mm-hmm.
We did have one bakery in Camden that made raised donuts, but we didn't eat them. Somebody did, clearly, because the bakery was making them, but my mother had very definite ideas about what was okay in Maine and what wasn't, and cake donuts were okay.
And there's also, actually, I'll let you pass those out so we can take a little taste while Sandy tells us a little bit. I believe that the potato donut also has a history in Maine. That is that. I think that
these
Yankee
happen
Magazine,
to be potato
oh,
donuts.
These are potato
that you're
donuts.
About to
okay.
Eat. I'm just gonna...
I read that Yankee Magazine. Back in 1937. Yeah.
That's where this recipe came from.
Okay. They published a recipe called Maine Potato Donuts because here we have the potatoes, so that's what people made them out of.
That's right. It was an interesting article, which I haven't seen yet, but I've got it on order because it was about food in Aroostook County. And so the people up in Houlton would be very interested in that, I would think.
Okay. Oh. I got myself a donut. These are nice and homey looking. They remind me of, I don't know if any caller, any listeners have read the Homer Price book with the donut machine that ran amok, written by Maine's Robert McCloskey, but this looks like the donuts in those illustrations. So I'm going to take a nibble here.
Mm.
A homemade donut means that you actually taste the flavor of the donut.
Right.
Because
mm-hmm.
it's not dripping with glazes.
And
delicious.
The other thing about it, I think, the appeal, and this is the appeal of Holy Donuts, too, and also any other donut that's really well made, is that the outside is kind of crisp and crunchy, and the inside is soft.
Right. Thank you, Nancy. That's a treat.
Mm-hmm.
We're all just munching right now. I will read an email from Aaron in Houlton. Every Christmas, my family makes Eleanor Farrington's donuts. Eleanor was my grandmother's best friend who taught my mother how to make donuts. We've always called them by their full name. They are a buttermilk cake donut with just two varieties, vanilla with a hint of nutmeg or chocolate with a touch of cinnamon. I always like to undercook a few so they're doughy in the middle. It is never truly Christmas until my mom, my sister, and I are able to get together with our kids to make our annual Eleanor Farrington's Donuts. That's wonderful. Thank you, Erin. And we also have a message from another of Maine's favorite donut shops. At Congdon's Donuts in Wells, we've been owned and operated in the same location by the same family since we started in 1955. While much has changed over the years, including the addition of our food truck park, Congdon's After Dark, last year, the flavors remain the same. We're excited and proud to be part of such an amazing and diverse group of bakeries in Maine. And diverse is right. I think we have, we've got food trucks, like they mentioned, with donuts, and we've got the old-fashioned places that have been around for a long time, and we've got some kind of new hipster donut places around. Go ahead, Alexis.
So for anybody who's familiar with the work of Kate McCarty, she's also credible. She's a local author and food writer as well. And in 2016, in conjunction with the show, she had just done a piece for the Maine Eater, where she did the best donut shops in Maine. And even though that's a few years old, and I know there's lots of new people making donuts and things, you might check out Kate McCarty's work on the donut, because she did a lot of tasting and a lot of writing. And for the exhibit, we had created this interactive map, which we're going to try to get live again at some point. But it was kind of a fun way to get a tour of just how many people are interpreting and creating their own versions of an American classic. Kate McCarty did a wonderful piece on that.
And did you run across the fact that I seem to have read somewhere that there are more donut shops in Maine than average? I mean, I don't know if we're like the most in the country, but
I feel like Los Angeles is another area that is like, it really any urban center you're going to find, just a variety of options. I don't know if that's true. Do you guys know anything about that?
Seems like we have an awful lot, because we have the chains as well, right? We've got Dunkin' Donuts, which took donuts out of their name, right? So it's Dunkin'. Tim Hortons, Krispy Kreme has a couple of branches here, but then we have all those, the abundance of bakeries and mom-and-pop shops.
That's right. Where I think the real interest is in those little places that are maintaining the tradition rather than the
right.
places that have gone on to national syndication.
On the way down, Nancy and I were talking about homemade donuts. I think Nancy gets a lot of credit for frying these in her kitchen and putting all that greasy smoke in
it. Just, can taste that, yeah.
I thought that possibly there was a generation a couple ahead of mine, maybe 20 years older than I, people who would have been about 100 right now, who were much more likely to make donuts at home than the current generation. Nancy speculates perhaps it's because not so many people are cooking at home, period. But I don't know. What do you think of that, Nancy?
I think my mother used to make donuts, but she didn't make them regularly. It was a special treat, maybe 3 or 4 times a year. But she came from a generation, of course, that cooked all the time. Everything that we ate was cooked by my mother. I do think that there is an enormous. You talked about people on the island, on Islesboro, where Sandy lives, having to cook because there is no option. But if you're not on a main island, you have so many other options, and you can go out to eat. You can order in. I mean, even in Little Camden, we've got. Dozens of different ways of feeding people apart from cooking at home. I think it's a tremendous loss in this country. And I wish we could get back to some time where, not where women stayed in the kitchen, but where people stayed in the kitchen.
And made donuts.
Men and women made donuts.
That's all they do.
Made cookies, made meatloaf, made roast beef, made whatever, but made it there. I think we'd be a lot healthier as a country.
I think there is a movement, right?
There is a movement, back. But I think it's a very thin,
thin
skin.
Movement.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, we have an email from Sally. I'm enjoying listening to your show. My family and I are beginning to fill the donut hole here in Belfast by offering the only donut at the United Farmers Market of Maine on Miller Street every Saturday. Our donuts are made with local spuds and cooked with canola oil. And we offer plain old-fashioned as well as cinnamon sugar, chocolate ganache, toasted coconut, and salted caramel crackle. We're excited and happy that so many people are interested in the donut. Have you guys heard of that place yet?
No, but I've heard of the Belfast Farmers Market, and it's a great addition to the local food scene. This is the Saturday Farmers Market, and I'm very happy to have. There was a donut person there originally, and she dropped out, so I'm really glad to have donuts back.
There really seems to be a resurgence. An email from James: I bet every state in the union and many counties within those states has an origin story for donuts. The first one I remember is the Pony Express rider whose baker sweetheart would fit her donuts over the horseman's fingers as he rode by so he wouldn't have to dismount.
That's great.
We will try to go to the phones now. Carrie is calling from Rockland. Hi, Carrie. What did you want to talk about?
Well, hello there, Rockland folks.
Hi, Carrie.
Hi, Carrie.
How are you all?
Good.
So we have a couple great places. You mentioned Willow Bake Shop, Brian Beggarly at Boyd McKay, the Schoolhouse Farm for those fabulous cider donuts. But, you know, what I think we talked about, raised and cake and Zeppelin, but nobody's talked about the fantastic French gruelers at Atlantic Baking Company available on Saturday.
Yes.
And they're the real pot de choux. Nancy, you know what I'm talking about. It's a real pot de choux, fried, the real pain in the behind to make. They're $2.50 a piece, but boy, are they worth it. So,
are these the kind that are still a circular one with a hole in it, or long crullers?
No, they have a hole in it, don't they, Carrie? The one I did had a hole in it.
Oh, you know, I see where we're differentiating between maybe a linear cruller is not a donut because it has no
That's what I'm wondering. Are they? Are they still donuts? But crullers.
Well, these do have holes in them. They do have holes. So, yeah, and they're fantastic. They're that eggy, light, you know, light, really rich, eggy nuts. And I buy a box for my staff and pass them out every Saturday morning.
Oh, that's awfully nice of you. Well, thank you for sharing that, Carrie. And Carrie was calling from Rockland. For some reason, we are having a little bit of trouble with our phones. So if you do have comments and questions, just go ahead and email them to talk@mainpublic.org or post them to the Maine Calling Facebook page. We did have another message. We do have lots of messages here from Facebook post from Kristen saying, Ralph's in Brooks, Frosty's in Gardner, and the Amish store in Unity all have excellent donuts. I miss cider donuts, which are found at most apple orchards in Massachusetts, Vermont, and Rhode Island, but we do have them here. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you could find them here. Speaking of the cruller, so there's other variations. I think there's the one made famous in New York, the Cronut, hybrid of a croissant and a donut that Dominic Ansel in New York made. We have a version of that here at Little Biggs. And I believe the story was that they were making them and calling them Cronuts, and they were told that they had to stop calling them Cronuts. So now they call them the C&D, which stands for cease and desist, because they had to stop using the name. But I can vouch for the fact that they are delicious. I don't know what you think, though, of this hybrid idea of mixing donuts with other things.
I've never had one.
I haven't either.
It's a trend. It's one of those
many trends.
Have you
tried it, Cindy?
Oh, yeah, I've tasted my way through a lot of things, so yeah, they are good. It's not traditional.
This speaks to the creativity of chefs, so I mean, that's something that I've been so drawn to in the work I've been doing for this project is the similarity, of course, between the creativity that artists bring to their work and historians bring to sort of their work, that chefs are no different in terms of the way that we're always. These trends rise and fall, but, you know, in terms of like returning to a classic to kind of reinterpret it and represent it, I mean, that is never going to stop. And so there's that wonderful crossover between, you know, arts, creation, and of course, cooking. So
I think that's what one of our listeners put on Facebook. Kyle said on Facebook, French cruller or Boston cream, pretty basic for me. No sprinkles or weird flavors. No pumpkin spice ever. So some people against the more trendy stuff there.
I will say, though, I'm trying to find an opportunity to share this because in January 6, 1916, the Boston Evening Record, I have a transcript from that post, and the captain himself, who's said to have put the hole in the donut, he made a distinction between donuts and crullers. He said that the donut is round with a hole and the cruller is long. He stated with finality. So the fact that we're talking about this, 1916 to now, so people, they do care about the name and the shape and all of that.
Right. So that's a big debate.
Some of the earliest recipes for donuts, though, say
make them in what shape you please.
Exactly.
So
yes, there is that. You were talking earlier about the triangle shaped or the
diamond shaped.
Diamond shaped in Miss Leslie's cookbook. Right?
Yes. Yes.
So those still count. Okay.
Yes. Yes.
We have Cindy on Facebook saying, please mention the new business Berry Fruit Farm and Bakery in Livermore Falls on Main Street. And they promote their farm fresh donuts there. And we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Lee Kellis from Holy Donut about what she's been doing there. So also, I just wanted to tell you about tomorrow's show. We'll talk about the debate over snow days and whether remote school days could take their place. Email your comments and questions to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet us or post to our Facebook page. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does UMaine's Collins Center, presenting Canadian Brass Christmas, Saturday, December 22nd. Tickets at collinscenterforthearts.com.
For decades, the U.S. government had evidence that coal miners were being exposed to toxic dust.
We was all young and strong and stout, and every one of us is either crippled or dead.
But the government did not act to stop it.
We was all young men. We were just kids.
An investigation into what's behind an epidemic of black lung disease in Appalachia this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered today at 4 here on Maine Public Radio. And coming up at 2, World Affairs, U.S.-China trade war, a battle for economic supremacy. In international trade, many experts believe that China has not played by the rules. But tit-for-tat tariffs, while justified, harm American consumers and producers. Is the tension between the U.S. and China simply about trade, or is it a battle for global economic supremacy? World Affairs coming up at 2 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, we are talking all about donuts. Joining us today, Alexis Yamarino. She's an artist and educator. Sandy Oliver, food writer and food historian. And Nancy Harmon Jenkins, cookbook author and food expert. Join our conversation. Our phones seem to be working now, so you can give us a call. Our number is 1-800-399-3566. And joining us on the line now is Lee Kellis. She's the founder and owner of The Holy Donut. Thanks for joining us, Lee.
Hi, my pleasure.
So you have quite a success story. The Holy Donut is regularly named by national magazines and media and all kinds of best of lists. So tell us how you got started.
Well, yes, I'm very grateful for that. It's kind of a fairy tale in terms of the press that we've received, which has been a big blessing. I started in my kitchen on Montjoy Hill in Portland about 7 or 8 years ago with a craving for donuts that was relentless. So I started experimenting and making them every day like it was a mission. And I came upon the potato donut recipe and fell in love. And 7 months later, opened my first shop in Portland, and now we have 3 stores selling quite a few donuts, handmade donuts every day, every year.
Oop, are you still
there?
Oh, great. And how did potatoes come into the equation?
A friend of mine who is a chef just happened to throw it out there and said, potatoes make everything better. Why don't you use mashed potatoes in your donuts? And I said, hey, why not? And I gave it a shot, and I thought they were delicious.
And does that mean that they are automatically gluten-free or no?
Nope. No, we need flour, so the potato adds to it, but the flour is definitely important. So we do make gluten-free every day with rice flour, but most of our donuts are with wheat flour.
Okay. Yeah. I was wondering about the gluten-free and the other dietary trends. Have you had to adjust what you offer accordingly to what people are eating now?
Oh, yeah. We do vegan every day and gluten-free and regular, traditional, so everybody can pretty much have something. Except the paleo people, they always are hounding us to revise a recipe, but I can only make so many variations of donuts.
You do have a lot of variations, that is, as it is, that we sort of devoured some today in our office here in honor of the show. And what do you think it is that's gotten you so much national attention besides the fact that they taste good?
Well, I think it's kind of unusual that we use mashed potato as the base, and our flavors are somewhat creative, and it's a family business. I don't know. There's a certain set of variables that came together that make it somewhat appealing. It's like Dunkin' Donuts, but it's the anti-Dunkin' Donuts. It's wholesome. It's quirky. We've got Buddhas in our shops, and I think people like the homegrown feel.
Right. And what are your top-selling flavors?
Oh, every day, probably the chocolate sea salt. The maple bacon is really popular, bacon cheddar.
Oh, that's what we were talking about earlier, bacon cheddar. So the savory ones are popular.
Oh, yes, very much so. Salt, everybody likes salt.
And do you have a personal favorite?
I like the sweet potato donuts myself. I eat those.
And you make those from mixed sweet potatoes, correct?
Well, they're not from, I don't think Maine has a sweet potato source per se, but we use both potato and sweet potato in those, and they're quite delicious.
Well, thank you, Lee, for joining us. Lee Kellis is the founder and owner of the very popular Holy Donut. And we're going to go now to a Facebook post from Leslie. Summer weekends at Montsweeg Flea Market, you can find delicious molasses donuts from the Donut Lady. I don't know her name, but I do know that her son was there this summer with homemade goods from her recipes. You have to get there early because they go fast. And that's the case, I think, at a lot of the donut shops. They do run
absolutely,
out, right?
Yeah.
In fact, you brought some from Willow Bake Shop.
Yes, I did.
Alexis, yeah. So we've got donuts all over the studio.
Donuts galore.
Going to get sugar high here. But and that's another a long-time bake shop in the region. Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah, this is actually, I have, for anyone who's interested in learning more about the contributors to the show, including, you know, the family that runs the Willow Bake Shop, we had done a short documentary about them. And Carrie, who called in earlier from Miranda, there's this wonderful story about the newest owners of the bake shop took it over. I think, do you know how long that the Josephs have had it now?
A long time.
Yeah, like a long time.
But, I mean, it goes back a long time. It goes back to Willow Street, actually, a long time ago.
But their story, and again, I've got a short film that you could reach out to me to see. It is essentially the Dave and Carla Joseph, who run Willow Bake Shop. They really represent to me like, you know, a family taking on a small bake shop just to kind of maintain a tradition in a community. So, you know, whatever that baked good may be, in our case, it happens to be donuts, but it's this tradition where families take on a business to kind of keep something alive. And that's what they've done.
And that does seem to be happening all over the state.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. We're going to go to a call now from Brian calling from Portland. Hi, Brian. What did you want to talk about?
Hey, how are you? Well, thank you for doing the show. Personally, I love everything donuts. I'm a former baker. I used to bake at a few of the local donut shops in Portland years ago. And now I'm a glassblower that makes glass donuts. So I've been on kind of both sides of the donut.
What does that mean, you make glass donuts?
Well, I'm a glass artist, and I make sculptures. Some are pipes and some are jewelry. And they look exactly like donuts.
Wow. And do people buy them as decorative objects?
Yeah. My pendants do very well. And then my pipes do really well. I'm all over the country. I was recently featured in Forbes.
Hmm.
They contacted me to do a story about me. So it's been, you know, a great ride so far, but all because of the donut.
For the love of the donut. Well, thanks, Brian. That's so interesting. If you have a photo you could post to our Face page, that would be great so people could see what they look like.
Yeah, I replied to a tweet or your Twitter, so you might see one there, but I'll try to jump on Facebook. But yeah.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you very much for doing this.
Sure. Thanks for the call, Brian. So definitely the love of donuts extending into art, like with you, Alexis. That's great. We have an email from, let's see, Barbara. And she says, I'm surprised that you have mentioned the infamous Gosselin's Donut Shop in Bangor and Brewer. They open early and only use cash or check, and once they sell out, they close down. They are amazing and have molasses donuts and other classic favorites as well. Are you guys familiar with that one as well?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, lots of molasses donuts actually around the state.
Good thing, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's one of my favorite.
And there's another, so many people recommending their favorites here. Nora on Facebook, I do think the Katahdin Coffee House in Calais is a decent place for good donuts. Then next best place is St. Stephen's, New Brunswick, at any Tim's. All right, so shout out there. And we will go to Liz calling from Biddeford. Hi, Liz. What did you want to say?
Good morning. You've made me so hungry. I can't keep my mouth shut. My grandmother, Winifred, she didn't have any money, and she had a huge old cook stove in her kitchen. and she used to make the best just plain donuts. And she couldn't measure the heat or anything else, but they were so crispy on the outside and so light and fluffy in the middle. And the other thing she did was she grew her own raspberries. And, of course, she had real butter. And she would make what we called fried dough, but is nothing like what you get at a fair. She'd just take a small handful of dough and throw it in the oil. And then, you know, once it was crispy, shake it out, and you'd open it up, and it would be nice and warm. You put real butter and homemade raspberry jam on it. Honest to God, we just don't get food like that anymore. That was the most delicious treats to have. And I don't know how she did it. I mean, she had no equipment to speak with, but boy, were they delicious.
It's that ingredient of love, right, from Grandma. Well, thanks for sharing that, Liz.
Yes, I guess so. Yummy. Thank you for the show.
Thanks for calling. And I'll go ahead, Sandy. What did you want to say?
We haven't talked yet about filled donuts.
Oh, yeah. Jelly-filled, cream-filled. Yeah. What are your thoughts
blueberry
on those?
Blueberry-filled.
Is that count as one of the more traditional classic kinds?
I don't think of it as a more traditional one. No. And I actually don't know much about filled donuts.
How do they get it in there? how do they squirt the jelly
with
the
syringe?
Yeah,
yeah,
with the syringe. Right. So it's actually kind of a technical thing getting them in.
But I think that's a very German tradition. And, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of times Hanukkah is associated with jelly donuts rather than latkes. And I don't know whether that comes from German Jews or what. But I know that there is a term, which of course is not coming to me in German, for those jelly-filled donuts.
Right. Again, all over the world, there are versions of things
that resemble
donuts, right? Mm-hmm. There's also, I think, beignets are basically donuts. Mm-hmm. There's no hole in them, but all kinds of versions. So we have an email from Beth, and she says, "Hello, can you ask your donut experts who made the most delicious cake donut I've ever had in the Bangor, Northern Maine area? I had this perfect donut at the Harvest Festival at the Bangor Civic Center in the fall a few years ago. I've dreamed about it ever since. Any ideas?" I don't know if any of you ran across this mystical donut. Any idea?
I would guess that it probably came from Gosselin's, because that's a name that comes up all the time when people talk about high-quality donuts up north there. And so maybe it did, or maybe it was just somebody who comes out once a year for the Harvest Festival and disappears otherwise.
Right. Now, Alexis, did you have you said you've been collecting all these stories. Was there any particular story that stood out that you wanted to share with us that someone told about a donut's importance in their life? Or
sure. I mean, there's so many. And again, just as a plug for this book, I just want to say that the book is available at local historical societies and libraries. So Maine Historical Society, Thomaston, Rockland, Rockport. So just for anyone who wants to read more of them, please check out your local library and historical societies.
What's the title?
The title is Whole History, Origins of the American-Style Donut. And it's available through Minerva and the library database.
I should add whole spelled H-O-L-E.
Right.
Don't
yes,
look for
thank
W-H-O-L-E.
You. Yes, yes, it's H-O-L-E. Well, I'll just really, I'll share a story. And this is just a story that I was told last Saturday, actually at one of my readings at the Thomaston Public Library, where the head librarian there had shared a story about how, similar to a lot of the stories I hear, where Sandy Oliver was sharing it, like it was really, donuts were made by the head of the house, and it was something that was made, well, in particularly in Maine, on pretty much a daily basis, is a way to get a bunch of kids fed and energized. So she shared a story about her grandmother, dusting off the little mouse footprints off of the lard, and frying and saying like, oh gosh, that seems so kind of gross. But at the same time, sort of like, these are really rustic settings. So now we have that kind of like that quintessential kind of like the story that is about really just feeding the masses, which is such a huge part of the donuts story, is just feeding, feeding the poor, feeding the people. And this one final, can I share one other brief story?
Sure.
Okay. Another story I was told on Saturday was a woman who, her grandfather came as an indentured servant to the States. And maybe this is a great-grandfather now, if I think about the timeline, but came over from England by way of PEI. And they made their way to Maine, and that was the first place that they ever had a donut was in Maine. And so she was raised eating donuts. that her descendants, you know, had, you know, learned, you know, that must be like 100 years or more. But I thought that was a wonderful story. And again, it speaks to this thing that we're talking about, a generation of people for whom they were cooked for at home by a loved one or someone sort of responsible in that way. And I think that that was kind of a sweet story, you know.
That's nice. We have more. We have lots of stories coming in. Boy, people do have donut tales in their families.
Yes.
So this is an email from John. My mother, Eleanor Thorpe, did a donut business from her kitchen in our home in Bath, Maine, from 1964 to about 73. She would get up at 3 a.m. and make somewhere around 50 to 60 dozen donuts to sell in local shops. They were called Friendship Donuts, after my father's Friendship Sloop, which he built. In the summers, I would row out to boats visiting in our harbor in Christmas Cove and take orders in the evening and deliver them to the boat in the morning. They cost 40 cents a half dozen. Thank you for sharing that, John.
That's a wonderful
story. That's terrific.
Wow.
Yeah, and we have a question for maybe for Nancy on this one. When cooking donuts at home, this is a Facebook post from Diane. Sorry about that. When cooking donuts at home, can you repeatedly use the lard again and again?
This is a really tough question.
Oh, no.
Yes, in principle, you can. And particularly if you strain it through a very fine mesh sieve or even a layer of paper towels to get rid of any of the gunk that's in there. I don't do it because I don't make donuts that often. And so I don't want to keep a bunch of lard around the house. But you know, if you were doing what the previous caller's mother was doing, yeah, she probably did strain the lard and use it day after day until it got too perfumed, let's say, for her to continue doing it.
Nice word. Okay. We're going to squeeze in a quick call from Richard, calling from Falmouth. Hi, Richard. What did you want to talk about?
Hi there. I'm an ex-schooner cook, and 20 years ago, I made raised donuts. Yeast donuts with jelly in them. And I will say that how we did it was cut two thin sides round and then just glue them together with egg wash.
Oh.
One benefit to doing it this way is when they come out and they're warm, that jelly is super warm and you get the experience of making jam from scratch, you know, where you just can't help but try some fresh out. But I had one mishap it was a tragedy, really. I had a whole batch of donuts, and I looked in the bottom of my fat, and I saw glittering silver, and I realized that my mercury thermometer to keep the temperature
had broken.
Oh, no.
Oh, horrors.
And I'm like, I can't poison the whole boat here. So I threw all the donuts away and carefully disposed of the mercury in the bottom of the fat. That's tragedy story.
Oh, a very dramatic jelly donut tale. Thank you, Richard. That's going to be our last word. Thank you all for joining us today. Sandy Oliver is a freelance food writer. Nancy Harmon Jenkins is a cookbook author. And Alexis Fiomarino is an artist and educator. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as helpful links and resources by visiting mainecalling.org. Today, show will be rebroadcast at 8. Tomorrow on the show, Rethinking School Snow Days. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.